Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy whose hair only smells like live weasels. I am Rob Cesternino. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rob Has a Podcast. And we are going to be getting into everything after the fifth episode of Survivor Ghost Island today with Figgy, a.k.a. Jessica Figueroa from Millennials versus Gen X. We have not spoken with her since her exit interview, but 2 years ago, it was October 2016. And yes, that the world didn't know about the big shakeup that was about to come, that Figgy and Taylor were going to break up. And then that was the big thing that everybody was talking about for the next month or so back in 2016. And so we are going to get into everything here today with Figgy and her thoughts on everything going on with Survivor Ghost Island. Of course, if you got the Survivor Know-It-Alls, that's up. You know about that. And then, of course, I spoke with Stephanie Johnson this morning. I thought that was a pretty good exit interview. She talked about how she kind of felt a little bit thrown under the bus by Michael and Jenna, something that I did not get from the episode, but it was an interesting conversation with her. And, of course, This Week in Survivor History with Rourke Luskin. Be sure to check that out in the podcast feed. And then so much more to come. We are just getting started here today with this conversation with Figgy, because then from here we've got Corinne Kaplan coming into the studio. The first time ever that we're talking with Corinne, and it's not about a binder. So we'll check in with her. Nicole will be here. And then, of course, the feedback show is coming up with Brett LaBelle. So get your voicemails in. I'll record that on Saturday, so you still have some time. And of course, this weekend's Wiggle Room with Jessica Lees filling in for Josh Wiggler, and all of your Wandoff entries. So a very busy week of Survivor podcasting still to come. Before we get to Figgy, let me take a moment and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast, and those are friends over at Beachbody On Demand. I love Beachbody On Demand. I still get out there, and almost every single morning that I can, I do my Beachbody On Demand workouts. It's so much better than going to the gym. I'm a procrastinator. I don't like to leave the house. Beachbody On Demand is perfect for me because there are so many on-demand workouts that I can do. I've been doing Body Beast all year, and I love it. It's great. I like to lift the weights. You don't need a ton of weights. You can do resistance bands. Whatever you're looking for, Beachbody On Demand has something for you with over 600 customized workouts available. Access everything on your web-enabled TV, tablet, smartphone, any other web-enabled device. They've got a great offer for our listeners. You can get a free trial membership when you text the word ROB to 303030 and get full access to the entire platform for free. All the workouts and nutritional information is available for you to free. Just text the word ROB to 303030. All right, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today, somebody who I had been meaning to chat with for some time, and I know she follows all of this stuff very closely, and here she is to talk about everything going on in Survivor, Ghost Island, and more, from Millennials versus Gen X, my favorite season, Jessica Figgy Figueroa. Figgy, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very good, Figgy. And looking forward to getting to talk with you. And you've become very prolific in talking about the show.
Yeah, I you know what? I think a lot of people don't realize how big of a fan I was before I played, and even more so now. So people are always excited and they're like, oh, wow, she's making a boot order. Oh, wow, she's actually watching. I'm like, yes, I've been a fan, everybody. So now everybody knows, I guess, and everyone's like, oh, wow. So.
No, I don't think that really came through the first time through or when you went on the show in, you know, the original airing of it. And I think that people probably looked at you and probably unfairly said, okay, this is probably a recruit that came out to the show. But you seem like that you are really invested in the show.
Oh, no, I absolutely love it. And I wasn't a recruit. I actually applied. And I think that's another thing that people probably don't know about me, too, is I definitely applied, made the video, went through the whole process as a fan would, a true fan at that. And yeah, so I love it. I love it all very, very much. I watch every single week and I watch it multiple times. I go over my own season. I watch old seasons and it never gets old for me.
Yeah. I mean, and you make videos about the show. You're always talking about it. And so it's very impressive, like the dedication, because people get burnt out also with it.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And I, you know what? It's still fresh to me. You know, I think even in 10 years, I'm still going to be watching Survivor just because I love it so much and it stays with you. And yeah, I can't say it enough how much I love Survivor, but especially after you play now, it just stays with you. I talk about it every day. I probably dream about it every other night and it just doesn't go away. So,
well,
and you, I'm sure you know that.
I hear you. So, tell me, what's your backstory? How did you become such a big fan of the show?
I think I watched when I was little. I started watching when I was very, very little. My mom watched it, yes. And my sister somewhat watched it. My dad didn't watch it. And my favorite Survivor growing up was Rupert, because Rupert was from Indiana. Mm-hmm. So that was like my diehard favorite. And I'm from Indianapolis, Indiana. Yeah.
Okay. Are you still there?
I'm in Nashville, Tennessee. I've lived in Tennessee for almost 4 years.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up watching the show, kind of drifted away from it a little bit, maybe in my teenage years, because we moved a lot, parents divorced, all that jazz, and went through that without TV, with TV, without it, without Survivor. Life was confusing. And finally got back into it, especially after I moved to Nashville. And finally, I had said I wanted to apply for so long, and I even tweeted about it, I think, in like 2011. I pulled up that tweet and I posted about it after my experience. And I was like, Jeff Pros, watch out for my video. Finally moved to Nashville and was like, you know what? I'm going to make an application video and finally send it in. I have a camera. I can do it now. I'm of age to apply. Let's get this over with. Did it. Waited for a while, didn't hear anything. It was crickets. And I was like, you know what? At least I tried. And then I finally got a call and I was like, oh my gosh, this might be happening. And now I'm talking to you. So life is good. I lived out a dream and I've been a fan since I was little and it still doesn't feel real.
Was the first call that you got for the show for Millennials versus Gen X?
Yes. Yeah. Because that was the first time I had applied was in... Oh, it was in 2015, beginning of fall. Mm-hmm. And that was when I'm sure they maybe, you know how it is. They don't really know what the theme's going to be until probably they get a good look at the cast and think what would go good with that. Or maybe they're trying to actually fit Millennials versus Gen X. But I'd applied the fall before we shot that. And I heard back a couple months later. But, you know, when you don't hear anything at first, and it's a process, you got to be patient with everything. And so many people, I think Dan Foley always would tell me every time I see him, he's like, I applied 1,000 times, but you know,
do you see him?
I don't see him that much. Honestly, I think I've seen him one time and I've only like chatted with him, through Facebook online, but, anytime I've heard him talk, whether it be on a video or on a podcast, he's always explaining to someone and even to fans, which is actually really cool. You know, it takes a long time. So me being I know, right? But me being a millennial, when I first did it, I'm like, all right, I haven't heard anything in a couple of days, so I guess it's not going to happen. And
yeah,
then it happens. So that was the first time I did apply, was for when Millennials for Gen X was about to go on.
Okay. Well, Figgy, I want to start to talk about this episode, and I watched it back again, and I was, you know, thinking about, you know, I'm going to be talking to you as I watched this episode, and I thought that you were actually a really good person to talk to, and not for the reason that people think, because here we have Stephanie Johnson, who is somebody who I bet that you can really relate to her experience on the show, in that she's a woman who for years and years wanted to get out to the show. It was her dream to go there. And then here she was in this bad situation, and she's going out much earlier than she wants to in the game. And she's, you know, faced with what's going to happen to her. And you can tell what a sad moment that is for her. And I would imagine that she is somebody that you would be very empathetic towards after having a somewhat similar experience.
Yeah, obviously she wasn't in any type of situation I was in with my showmans or whatever, but you know, being a part of a tribe swap early and then it kind of messing up your numbers. She is exactly kind of in the situation I was, you know, we're diehard fans, ready to play this game. And then one little twist can mess everything up and no one's prepared for it. And she got in this bad situation where the numbers did not lie on her side. And then she has to go early. And it is such a bummer because, as you know, we all watch her play and she has so much game left in her and she loves it and she wants to make her kids proud. And, you know, we all go out there and play and we want to challenge ourselves and become the best version of ourselves, as Zeke says, back on My Season and Game Changers. But, you know, you are really challenging yourself and adapting to this atmosphere. And she was just doing so good. And to see her life cut super short was very unfortunate. I definitely felt for her, because that's exactly how I felt as well with My Season. It was very, very unfortunate.
Now, Steven talked about this a lot on the Know-It-Alls last night, and he did a really great job. And I have to give credit, and I hate to do it, but I have to give a lot of credit to Steven because he really did a great job in his People blog as well this week, talking about what he really loved about this episode. And what he felt like it did was that it really captured how much heart there is in the players, in that they come out here and you go to Survivor with every dream in the world. Every single person that steps foot on that beach is going out there with the dream. Okay, I am going to go out there 39 days. I'm going to be the greatest. This, everybody's going to love me. I'm going to win $1 million and my life is going to be changed forever. And for Stephanie, you know, it was that slow realization that that dream was not going to come true. And he said that the show did a really great job of capturing that. Did you find that the episode really resonated for you on that level?
I think so as well. I mean, you know, she goes to Ghost Island and then she doesn't.
Nothing.
You know, it just is the whole episode. It was very like this. It was a funeral episode for her. You know, it's just like one thing after another, after another. And, you know, it was very sad. I'm sure she probably definitely either knew it was either going to be her, Jenna, or Michael, and the odds may have been looking more in her favor to be going, especially if you have this feeling within you like, man, I think I'm going home. It's just, it's the worst feeling ever. I felt that whenever I got eliminated, I was like, I think I'm going home and my dream's about to end. And it doesn't feel real as soon as your torch gets snuffed. It doesn't feel real. And then you're walking out and you're like, this is a dream. I'm going to wake up. This isn't real. This is a dream. And it just, it ends. And it was a very sad episode watching Stephanie, leave. And I think they did a great job, you know, kind of showing the whole process. And, I think that was great in her honor.
Now, when you went out in the game, and I went back and I listened to my exit interview with you back from, October 2016.
Oh man.
I wanted to refresh everything in my mind, and you were especially fun that day. But going back to that, we were talking about your episode and you were portrayed as going out in a blind side. You said you felt like that you had an inkling that something was going on. Do you feel like, is it easier though to go out of the game where you sort of really suspect that it's going to be you and have time to process it, as opposed to somebody who goes out in a sheer blind side who never saw it coming?
Yeah, that's really hard. I think I would rather have a sense and kind of prepare for that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what I did with My Season.
Like Obi-Wan Kenobi was about to get struck down by Darth Vader.
Yeah, pretty much. I sensed it coming, and I would rather just prepare for my death scene, because a blindsided, I still felt a little blindsided. Adam and I felt like I was kind of creating this new alliance with him. And I almost, you know, I was very infatuated in the situation I was in. And the gamer deep in me was like, offer to chop Taylor's head off and vote him out. But it was just, I was just so infatuated in the situation I was in that I truly thought that Adam was going to vote with us. So, my head went directly into my, lap and my hands. And I was just like, oh my goodness. And I'll never forget it, because it immediately I felt that knife go on my stomach. And, I was happier to know that it was coming a little bit blindsided, but at the same time I sensed it, and it, no matter what, it always hurts, and it always hurts every single time, no matter how it's done. I think a blindside is way worse though.
You said that you watch your season a lot. Do you skip the part where you get voted out? I'm interested to know that from people who watch their seasons a lot.
I skip over a lot of parts on my season. Of course I do. But I've watched it a couple times. I wouldn't say I watch it all the time. the main things I like to watch when I look back on my season are my challenges, where I just, you know, that was me at my best. That's me in my prime. Like, I'm very competitive, and those challenges, everyone just kind of lives on that adrenaline every day. You're hardly sleeping. So the challenges give you that adrenaline that you need to run throughout the day. And those are the parts that I love watching, because that was where I'm always smiling and I'm not worried about going home, and we're focused on winning. And especially the challenges where we're winning, and the physical ones in the water, like that's really what I look back on for the most part.
Do you think that there's a fan out there that can make an edit of your season with just the parts you like? Would you be interested in that? A mixtape?
Yeah. Hey, you know what? Send me a mixtape of what I like, because I'm honestly so tired of seeing figtail mixtapes like that. That needs to stop.
Why, people make that a lot on YouTube? Like, there's a lot of figtail stands that are out there that make...
People tag me on Instagram in these figtail videos, and I get it. Like, you know, a lot of kids like that, and they loved it, and that's awesome. But
who did that? Michael Yerger?
I don't know. Yeah, Michael did. I don't know who does them, but I get tired of seeing them, and I get tired of getting
making them.
Yeah, please just stop. Let it go and quit asking me what happened to figtails, because y'all know what happened to figtails.
If I get asked that one more time,
oh my goodness, I don't know what's going
to
happen.
What do people say to you?
Like, I get comments all the time, but what about figtails? And it's been over 2 years. Can we just let it go? Yeah. I'm hoping Jenna and Sebastian can kind of take away this from me, because I'm just...
We'll get to them. I want to talk about Stephanie just a little bit more with you.
Do you
feel like that there was something that you saw she could have done differently?
I think she played a really strong game really early. And I don't know if, you know, everyone else picked that up. It seemed to me that Jenna, I mean, they wanted the more harmless one between her and Jenna, and Jenna is way less, she's very harmless in comparison to Stephanie. I think Stephanie showed, that she is a very strong competitor. She's athletic. She brings a lot to the table, but she's a thinker. And amongst all those people, I think that was very threatening. So I think that she could have maybe hid that a little bit more, been a little bit more quiet, and listen to more people. I think that was the only thing that I could say that maybe she could have done differently.
Do you feel like that they made the right decision in taking her out as opposed to Michael or Jenna?
It was either having to be her or Michael, to be honest. I think Jenna right now is coming off as a little bit of a weak player. Maybe in challenges she performs very well for them that we're not really seeing as much. You know, they're panning to certain people, but she's not really coming off as a threat as much as Stephanie or Michael is. Michael's athletic. He's lying about all these idols and what they can do. And he is very, very smart. Stephanie, on the other hand, though, is really, really smart. And I think maybe Michael gave them that upper hand with, if you guys want to keep winning challenges to keep your numbers, you're going to need me over Stephanie. And I think that's maybe why he stayed. But I would say Stephanie was the smart choice. If they do want to actually keep on winning, they need that guy.
So let's talk a little bit about Jenna. And you mentioned that she is now getting into this potential relationship with Sebastian. Now, I thought it was interesting that she sort of framed it as, okay, well, I need to do whatever it takes to stay in the game. And I am going to get into this showmance as a way to sort of protect myself, which I think is not traditionally the way that a showmance is thought of in the game as something that is going. Usually, I mean, you would think, as you would know, that people who are in a pair like that become targets. So what did you think of that as a strategy from Jenna?
Yeah, well, what we're seeing right now, I feel like, is not as blossomed per se as Taylor and I were on my season, right? Like, we like came out of the gate blazing, like,
boom.
And then, like, well, I didn't want it to be like that, but somebody just couldn't stop following me around. But anyways, with their situation, I think it's, she's kind of playing it off a little bit smoother, right? She is like, here, smell my hair. And he is like, yeah, smell mine. And it's a little weird, whatever.
Yeah,
but,
and he said that her hair smells like a dead weasel.
I know. I don't know. He says some really crazy stuff. Laffy taffy, low, low, low. I give him a pretty hard time online about that. I'm like, what did you just say?
She likes
always
it.
Something. Yeah, I know. It's very surfer dude, Florida dude of Sebastian to come up with these one-liners, and I love them, and I'm sure America loves the one-liners too, but I think Jenna's being very smooth about how she's flirting with him and kind of, you know, just being like, help me. And he's like, you're cute and your hair smells like a dead weasel. I'll help you out. So I think she's just very smooth about it.
Mm-hmm. So do you feel like that this is going to be something where it looked like in the episode that they were talking about Jenna as, oh no, Sebastian has her. She's a number for us now because Sebastian has her. Do you think that that's going to be effective for her to be in this relationship with Sebastian?
I think so. I think if she wants to stay in the game, she pretty much is indebted to doing whatever they say, because, you know, once we make a merge, it seems like those people are still going to have really high numbers unless someone starts changing that thing up real quick. But I think that at this rate, I get why they're saying that, like, Sebastian's got her, she's his number, because they don't see her as a threat. They don't see her as a game player. Maybe she'll emerge in the upcoming weeks. But as of right now, I think that she definitely has to do exactly what they say in order to stay in the game and further herself.
So I was thinking about this in comparison to your season, and I think that we're actually at a similar point where now the swaps were a little bit different in Millennials versus Gen X, because you guys had four tribal councils and then there was a swap and you swapped to three tribes. They've already had a swap, but numerically, they're in a very similar place where, much like the Millennials in your season, Naviti has only lost one person so far, whereas everybody else went out in the before the swap in Millennials versus Gen X were all from the Gen X tribe. And here, everybody else that went out has been from Malolo. But it seems as though that this Naviti group is a group with a bit of a fracture. Now, the Gen X tribe had fractures themselves. They might have even been more fractured than the Millennials. But we saw that even though there were numbers for the Millennials, it wasn't necessarily like the Millennials were going to be able to pick off people from the Gen X. And Gen X actually kind of rallied a little bit after the swap. Do you think that we're in a situation where Naviti is going to be able to keep their numbers after a swap, potentially to tribes or three tribes of five? Potentially. I don't know how it's going to be split up. But I think that it could be a situation where maybe that the new tribes of five start to stick together.
Yeah, I don't know, because looking at the new Naviti, like you said, there's fracture in there and people are definitely making new alliances in comparison to Malolo. Malolo is like, oh, we're sticking to this original tribe. See you never. And when they come back in a merge situation, I truly think that they're going to kind of be in a little bit of a surprise, because I know even before we did a swap, we all were looking around and we're like, all right, Millennials got to stick together, blah, blah, blah. And in my mind, I'm thinking to myself, I don't know if this is really going to happen because we have fractures. People don't like certain ones in our group, but I think that the Malolo is definitely going to be in surprise come emerge with the new alliances that have formed.
Yeah. Do you think that they might be set up well? Because I do think that there is going to be room for them to sort of be looked at as the pawns on the board, as Naviti might have some sort of like internal power struggle.
I definitely agree with that. We're going to have to see with, you know, what's going on with all these tribal councils coming up before the merge. But it's just hard to say for me. I honestly keep getting confused with the swap on who was on what original tribe. And it's very difficult for me to keep up with who's on what tribe right now for some reason. Mm-hmm. And I was even talking with people last night about that. And I was just like, wait, who's on what tribe? Because now we're about to enter another swap. And I'm going to get even more confused now. But I think that there's going to be trouble in paradise for Naviti come emerge with the new alliances.
Would you prefer that there were less swaps in the show? Would you like to see one tribe or the tribes just stay in their original format all the way down to the merge? Would you prefer to see that?
I'm okay with like one swap, but with Ghost Islands, with that being the theme, we can't expect anything to go smoothly, right? Mm-hmm. Expect the unexpected.
Ghost smoothly.
So, exactly. Yeah. To ghost smoothly. When I actually did my boot order, I didn't take into consideration what would happen with Ghost Island. Right. So I'm going strictly off who I think is going to get voted out and blah, blah, blah. And people were getting saved because they were getting sent to Ghost Island. They became immune. I didn't take that into consideration. So like I said, expect the unexpected. And it's a crazy, crazy season.
So when I went back and listened to the exit interview, you talked about how I asked you, did you know that Adam Klein had the idol? And you said that you didn't know, but you thought that he might. And you even one time went through his bag to check to see if he had the idol. And that was something that we saw Desiree do to see if Stephanie might have an advantage. That, do you think that's a good move on Survivor?
I don't know why people think I'm a bad person for saying I would go through someone's bag. I'm totally okay with it.
You're a bad person because you went through Adam's bag?
No, but No, but online, I've seen that before. And like people that, when I've talked about it in other podcasts about how, what I feel about going through people's bags, it's like, people are like, really? Like, you think that? I think that's like against the rules. I'm like, this is Survivor. I'm sorry. I went through everyone's bags all the time. Yes, all the time.
You mean, what day do you start going through everybody's bag?
not day one, but probably like the day that we went to tribal, probably day six, day seven on my season.
Okay. So day six, you are looking through everybody's bag because you want to see who has the idol.
Exactly. There were so many rumors going around my original millennial tribe. And I was just like, you know what? Keep them busy. I'm going to go through all the bags. So I was the culprit and I was just like little rat digging through bags. I did not care at all. And I did it on my swap tribe. No, but I know like people in my alliance knew that I was totally doing that. And I just didn't care. Survivor. I'm sorry. Like if you're dumb enough to put in your bag, let's just get caught while we're at it.
Yeah. Does anybody still put the idol in their bag? Is that an old tradition that nobody actually does anymore?
You know, I think it depends on the person. I think one of these times we're going to get someone that's not that bright and they're probably going to put it in their bag.
Somebody put it in their bag. Yeah. We've seen survivors are like either they're burying it, we've seen, or they have it on their person. Figgy, if you played again, would you pat people down or would you like make up excuses to sort of frisk people?
No, but I was definitely staring them up and down, behind, around, everywhere I could. And if they take off their shoes, I'm probably going to go in those too.
Okay, you're going to check. Nobody's going to be able to hide an idol if you're around anymore.
Yeah, if there's going to be security set up right as you walk up the hill to get to back to camp through from an immunity challenge, and then I'm going to pat you down, make you turn around, and then see if you can walk through.
Yeah, drop something on the floor, make sure.
Yeah.
Pick that up. Okay, let me check. So then... In terms of if you're one of your allies was Desiree and you saw her looking through the bag, would you think any differently of her knowing that she is a bag checker?
No, because then she's doing the dirty work for me and I don't have to get my hands dirty.
Yes. So would you trust her totally more or less knowing that she's a bag checker?
You know, if she was my number one ally, I would trust her even more because she's willing to do whatever it takes to find out the truth.
Mm hmm. Okay.
So I like it. I dig it. I'm totally okay with that because I'm a bag digger too. So it's fine. So bad.
Okay. I want to talk a little bit about Ghost Island because I know that it's the whole central idea of the show. And I really liked it after the first couple of episodes, but I've had some questions about it after these last couple of shows and especially this week. So let me play a voicemail for you from one of our listeners. And this is a voicemail from Chelly. I think she really does a good job of expressing how I'm feeling about Ghost Island right now.
Hi, Chelly from Minnesota here. I have a couple of questions about Ghost Island. First, I'm wondering, what is the point of sending someone to Ghost Island if there's no game to play? A few weeks ago, it had the added functionality of saving someone from tribal, but now that's gone. Now, if there's no game to be played, why send someone? Is it to allow producers to showcase more characters, or is the idea that the 24 hours that player is away may significantly shift the way a vote is going to go? The second question is, we saw that there will be a tribe switch this week. If there are three tribes moving forward, do you think the first place tribe chooses who goes? Or both the first and second place tribes would have to choose together, or probably doesn't matter anyway, because it will likely go to rocks. Thanks.
Okay. So let's talk about that first part of the question in that we have Ghost Island. And in the beginning, the first couple of weeks, it was a thing. Okay. Oh, the person who goes to Ghost Island is going to miss tribal council. And that really did change things, that we saw that Stephanie ended up going out first because Jacob was at Ghost Island. And then Chris was going to get voted out. And then he went to Ghost Island. And had that same mechanic been in play, it would have really changed around the vote from the last tribal council, because we would have potentially had 4 versus 4. And then Stephanie, when she gets sent to Ghost Island, she would have not gone home in this episode. So it really would have drastically changed the season around. But instead, that we have now, people are going to Ghost Island, but they're coming back before the tribal council. And in the case of Stephanie, she doesn't even have a chance to do anything. So what's the point, Figgy?
Yeah, in that time period, I think maybe production is looking for something dramatic to happen. Mm-hmm. And I mean, maybe it did allow Michael to kind of break in there with them and be like, hey, you know, I know this happened. I really want to work with you. Maybe a bond was really created to save his ass.
Yeah.
And same thing for Jenna.
And it did. And that is exactly, according to my exit interview with Stephanie, that's exactly what happened. But I mean, but now people are just pulling a rock out of a bag. And now it's like, I got to just be taken away from my tribe for 24 hours randomly because I pulled a rock out of the bag. And I don't know if that's what anybody wants.
Yeah, it's really unfortunate. I almost wish that maybe Stephanie would have created a fake idol or something at that time. And I know, like, it was kind of like a moment for her to just enjoy being away and meditating or whatever she may have been doing on Ghost Island, just enjoying her time. But I mean, knowing that it's you or it's between you and two other people, you got to do something. And I don't even care if she were to lie about something, and maybe, you know, actually make a good lie about paperwork, unlike Jacob did early on. But I think the point is of sending someone to Ghost Island now is to really cause some dramatic things to happen. And I mean, we're not really seeing something crazy on our screen. Like, I'm not seeing a fist fight or anything happen. But I feel like that's why they're doing it. And I hate it because at first it really, really confused me. I was like, why are we doing this way now? But again, it's Ghost Island, so we can just do whatever we want. That's how I kind of look at it. It's crazy. Yeah.
Well, it used to be that when there was Exile Island was kind of a punishment where you would go there and the conditions were harsh and there was nothing there. Maybe you could go find an idol on Exile Island, but it was difficult to go there. There was a lot of survivors that they had a difficult time on Exile Island. We're here on Ghost Island. It seems like there's a shelter. There is, you know, as much rice as you want. There is fire. So you really are able to have a, you know, a pleasant experience. You're by yourself, and that's a lot for some of these survivors to deal with. But it seems like that the punishment is that you are sort of like taken from your group. But I don't think that is super compelling to have as this big thing in the game. If anything, that we should, and it's being decided just randomly after the challenge at this point, because we have these swapped out tribes. If anything, I think that somebody should pull a rock out of the bag and then the person from the winning tribe gets to pick who goes to Ghost Island.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's chaos. And I really hate that we just can't agree on a person ever. And it kind of creates some boring content for us. It's like, come on, like, argue about it and come up with an agreement here.
It's a cop out.
Yeah, it really is. And I'm just tired of seeing people draw rocks. Yeah. I'm kind of over the drawing rocks thing.
Yeah, but at least if we drew the rocks where one person would have to make the decision, where it's like, okay, well, now somebody from the winning
tribe. Okay, yeah, I agree. That would be really nice. So maybe you should.
Chris pulls the rock, and now, okay, Chris, who from the other side are you going to send to Ghost Island? I feel like that at least would raise the stakes a little bit.
100%. Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I actually really like that. So let's go talk to them about that and change it up.
Yeah, look, because I'm not complaining about Ghost Island, but I'm saying that if we're getting to the point where a random person is going there and nothing is happening and they're not even missing a tribal, why are we spending 10 minutes of the episode there?
I 100% agree with that.
But you know what I'm saying? I'm exaggerating, Vicky. That's what I do. But I'm trying to make a point.
No, it totally feels like 10 minutes. I agree with you 100%.
Okay. Going back to Naviti in terms of that there is this conflict that is there between Chris and Dominic from the very beginning of the game. You two were in a feud during your original tribe with Michaela. Do you see any similarities between the feud between these two warring factions in this big tribe?
I do, because I feel like we always wanted to get the other person out at the beginning. I mean, eventually we had to work together.
Why were you feuding with Michaela? I'm still unsure.
She'll say her story and I'll say mine.
She wanted to be with Taylor?
Yeah, that's exactly it. No, not at all. No. So right out the gate, she was just kind of a negative energy around camp. I mean, she worked hard, but she complained somewhat a lot. And everyone else kind of picked up on it. And maybe you can ask Game Changer contestants one day what they think about the situation too. But that's just kind of the vibes we got. And then when we go to challenges, she would just sit down on the ground and she'd be like, no, this is what I do. I just rest, blah, blah, blah. And it just gave us like negative feelings. Mm-hmm. And it really agitated me because I just want us to all be team players and I want us to all pump each other up, not bring each other down. So right out the gate, that wasn't a personality that I was interested in working with and I couldn't really get along with. And then Hannah created a lie and told me that Michaela was being mean to her and bullying her. But then Hannah said the same thing to Michaela about me. So
why
that,
she wanted to stir the pot?
I'm guessing she wanted to stir the pot. I don't know why that didn't make the show, but I think that's exactly what happened because Michaela told me that that happened. And I was like, well, she told me this too. So from my understanding, Hannah stirred the pot a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Just fine. That's a part of the game. Not mad about it. It just created way more drama. So, you know, then one morning, Michaela and I were kind of fine. We were like tending the fire at night. We stole corn together, cooked it, ate it while everyone was sleeping, went back to bed when it was our shift to go to sleep. We woke up that morning and she was just livid. And I was so confused because we were like singing Kumbaya the night before. And that's genuinely why I was so confused because the night before we were cool. And she just went off. And I had been bullied all my life.
Why was Michaela mad?
I think she was mad because I feel like she woke up feeling like, okay, like this is a fake relationship her and I have. Mm-hmm. Like we're cool one second and then the next we don't like each other. I don't like it. So I think she just really thought I was being phony with her, but honestly, she just knew I didn't like when she was negative and neither did anyone else. And it was really hard. So she woke up all angry and I genuinely was confused. So what you saw my reaction, I was just like, I don't understand what's wrong. I seriously didn't understand what was wrong because the night before we were cool. And then I had to stand up for myself because I was not about to let someone just attack me, especially on national television. I had been bullied all my life. And I decided, like, once I moved away from Indiana, I'm like, never again. Like, I'm standing my ground. I'm telling people how I feel. I don't care. I grew a really thick skin, grew a backbone. And I was like, all right, I'm going to come after Michaela. She wants to come after me. I will stand my ground. I'm half Puerto Rican. I'm super spicy. Let's go. Let's get it on. Like, I did not care. So we were just going at it. I got threatened with a machete. Knew that wasn't going to happen. So I was just like, okay, honey. Okay, blah, blah, blah. So that's when all that happened. And ultimately, we had to work together. It was wild. It was such a wild interaction with a human being.
Now, did you guys end up burying the machete after that, or that figuratively, in terms of was there ever a time when you guys were able to come back together before you were out of the game?
No, we were never able to come to back together after the game. I mean, when we were working together after that vote. Mm-hmm. I think we both felt comfortable, but she still just could not stand me. And I mean, as you know, on the islands, and I always tell people this, everything about you is heightened times 100. Mm-hmm. So if I'm super loud back home, I'm the loudest person out there on the island. Like people on other islands can probably hear me. That's how I feel. Like everything's heightened. So sorry, I just spaced out.
No,
what?
That's interesting that because they're when I talk to, you know, a ton of survivors, and you know, you'll get people that say, oh, when I was out there, that was, you know, that was a character I was playing, or that was a part of me. And it sounds like you're saying, similar to how I feel, that Survivor is something along the lines of truth serum, in that you are your truest self in a way on Survivor because all of these trappings are taken away.
Yeah, you have to adapt. Anybody who says they're playing a character, someone from my season, like an injury didn't make, TV, or maybe it did. I'm not going to out this person, but they told me that they were acting like something happened and it was for the cameras. And I'm just like, bullshit. Like, I know that was you. Like, it's not for the camera. Like, this is who you are as a person and everything's just heightened. You're paranoid. You're hungry. You're exhausted. Like, this game.
This was Paul Wachter.
Yeah.
Sorry, Paul, if you're listening.
How did you know? He's not going to listen to this. How do you know?
He's not listening. Yeah.
How did you know? Well, it's Paul. He's fishing somewhere.
He's
That's why.
He's fine. So.
So
to go back to, okay, so you're saying that, okay, so you're feuding with Michaela, and yeah, even though you're able to come together for a vote, that yeah, it's still that you want to get her and she wants to get you. So yeah, for Chris and Dominic, who have had this friction where they're both looking at the other one, okay, we're getting rid of him. So this is going to come to a head one way or another. And I think that what might be the most interesting situation is if they end up on separate tribes after this next tribe swap. And then ultimately, will we get this confrontation at the merge?
Yeah, I could see that totally happening at merge. I'm really hoping that they split up because I really like Dominic and I don't know what Chris is capable of. You know, he's bonding with people we saw on this episode and he's pulling people's heartstrings a little bit to kind of sway towards his side versus Dominic. And
he's kind of good, Chris.
He is, right? Like we're seeing some emotion from him. We're seeing actual like a human being versus someone who people would say, you know, I hear people all the time saying, oh my God, he's such a douchebag, all this and all that. But, you know, I met him in real life and he does have a really big heart. I just think that he has a very difficult time interacting with another human being. I don't know if he just has never taught how to speak to one another or what, but he does lack a lot of social skills. And maybe that's just something he, you know, lacked growing up. And that's okay, but it's not the best thing in Survivor, obviously, where it's become a social game. So I think for these two, we're going to see a head-to-head battle of the ages. And I'm rooting for Dominic in the situation because he has a lot of advantages that I actually want to see play out very well.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see exactly, who we potentially could lose in this scenario. Now, Millennials versus Gen X had a very interesting period between the swap and the merge in that you had these groups of five and then the one group of six was that Ikabula group. And we saw in three different tribal councils that the original tribe that was in the minority actually voted out somebody who was from the majority in each of those three votes that happened in post swap in Millennials versus Gen X. So if we were going to just take a look at the what the decisions were in terms of those groups, do you feel like that the people that were that are the physical threats, like the biggest challenge competitors, do you think that they are more likely or less likely to be taken out in the next couple of rounds?
That's difficult to say. I honestly think that if we do break it down to three tribes, that you would need a little bit of strength because otherwise you're just going to start losing your alliance. If let's say you did have a really tight alliance, you need to have strength in that group of people in order to win. So I feel like, man, that's hard to say, but I really feel like you're going to at least want one really big, strong player. And if you don't have that, then you can kiss your alliance goodbye.
Well, I think it depends also on which tribal council it happens at, because in going back to the Millennials versus Gen X, just to remind people, so after the swap, there were three votes that happened. The first vote was that you had the group with Chris was working with Zeke and Michelle, right? And they were deciding between David Wright or Cece, the two people that were really struggling in the water in that challenge in that episode. They ultimately decided to get rid of Cece. part of the reason I would imagine was because that she was struggling in the challenges. And then the last person to get voted out before the merge ends up being Michaela, who is a dominant physical player. She's voted out because, oh, well, she could be a threat after the merge. So it'll be interesting to see how much of a factor that is. Like, could somebody like Chris go out in this spot? Because one, you might need him in this group of five, but also the merge is right around the corner.
Yeah, I think if you are a fan of the show, you'll kind of estimate what number that merge is going to happen at. Mm-hmm. And if you're not, then you might end up keeping the stronger people. But it could be a situation where once you feel like you're at the very last spot before a merge happens, you might cut out your strongest guy just to eliminate him from individual challenges.
Okay. Let me play another voicemail for you. This is a question that comes to us from one of our listeners. This is Podrick Racer with a question for Figgy.
Hey, Robin Figgy. Podrick Racer here. Last night, after the vote, Michael thanked Bradley for saving him. Seabass saw this and gave them both the side eye. What do you think will come of this? Love to hear your thoughts. Thanks.
Okay. Do you think that there will be any sort of blowback from Michael saying to Bradley, thanks for saving me?
I definitely think there could be something to come of that, because now it definitely kind of looks like Bradley is in control. And we already knew that, you know, Sebastian was like, in his mind was like, all right, well, if they're going to start taking out the strong people, I'm a strong person. So that's not a good thing. So possibly Sebastian might start thinking a little bit more on the strategy side instead of the smelling hair side, and might start to be like, all right, well, if they really think Bradley's in control, maybe I need to make a move and maybe this is my time to work on that resume. So Michael doing that, maybe that was part of his strategy too, to be loud and be like, thank you, Master Bradley. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely see that side eye and can expect maybe something to come of that.
I do think, though, that it was a good move for the most part on Michael's part to really play into, oh, thank you, Bradley. Oh, Bradley, you are the supreme master. You know, my life is in your hands, Bradley.
Yeah.
I think that that is a good move to sort of play to Bradley's ego.
Yeah. And then like Bradley kind of was just like, top of the hat to you. Of course, I got you, son. Like he definitely was just like, you're welcome. And like you said, you know, great move on Michael's part to be very boisterous about that and kind of put the hot seat now with Bradley sitting in it.
Yeah. Now, I want to know from your perspective. So here is Michael. He is 18 years old. He's telling people that he is 23. Do you think that he should reveal at any point that he is, in fact, 18 years old? Because I feel like that if he was to say to Bradley, Bradley, I have to tell you something, I'm only 18. I feel like that Bradley would want to keep him under his wing and keep him more as like, okay, I'm less threatened by this person because he's only 18, as opposed to seeing him as a potential peer and a rival.
Oh, that's another tough question. At this point, when you lie to someone,
and you played with Will Wall, and Will was what? Was Will 19?
No, he was 18 and he wasn't threatening at all. I totally get that. But you know what? For being an 18-year-old, he's really smart. And if
Will,
I mean,
Michael,
no, Michael.
Oh, well, you say Will is not very smart.
No, gosh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I would say Will was not the most strategic person from my season.
Who's
I don't
smarter,
think
he, Will Wall or Michael?
Michael.
Michael.
100%.
A lot smarter or a little smarter?
A lot smarter.
Okay.
Will was a rat on my season.
Okay.
Like, and I guess he smelled too, a stinky rat, but
like a weasel.
Well, he was a total weasel because he was like flip flopping, like getting information from one person. He was lying to me, trying to get Jay against me and saying Jay's trying to vote me out and all this stuff. I'm like, you're being a total weasel right now. You're a little island rat. Like, pick your side and who you're talking to and figure it out for yourself. And obviously he ended up working with us in the long run, but he was definitely a little weasel. And Michael, you know, he seems like he's a very a loyal ally, and he's way more strategic in his gameplay. You know, I don't really think Will was ever, and maybe he was searching for idols and I just never saw it. But in comparison to both 18-year-olds, Michael is definitely way above Will Wall's game, 100%.
But do you feel like that people would be less threatened by him if he was to reveal that he was 18? Or do you think that people would say, oh, I don't know if I can trust this guy because he was lying to us the whole time?
If you reveal a lie, it's like the same thing like with Dominic, right? Dominic like claimed like to Chris, oh, I was lying to you. Here's the idol. Even though he showed a fake one, Chris didn't react very awesome to that. He's like in a confessional, oh, well, he lied to me and that was weird. So I don't really trust him. I think an 18-year-old lying about his age, that's a very small white lie. But again, when everything's heightened, that could easily freak someone out because he's very intelligent. He's really crafty out there. He's playing the game. And I can't say many 18-year-olds would play the same game that he is right now.
Okay. Figgy, going back to Jacob Derwin, in the premiere episode of Survivor Ghost Island, he said that Malolo was the greatest tribe that Survivor has ever seen. Some have said that the Survivor Millennials tribe is the greatest tribe of new players. Did you get offended when Jacob Derwin said Malolo was the greatest tribe?
No, because they aren't at all. they aren't at all. And, you know, he says, I was saying all this to get sent to Ghost Island. So, and he's very dramatic as a character, maybe in real life too, but he just comes off as like everything's very extra with Jacob. So I don't agree that they are the greatest tribe of all time. Hashtag Kanye West. But, you know, everyone can say what they want about the Malolo. But as Sebastian says, can't go for the Lolo than the Malolo.
Okay. Figgy, I have some questions here from the listeners of the podcast. I want to get into them with you. But first, let me take a moment and thank a sponsor for this podcast. Support for today's show comes from our friends over at Microsoft Teams. Microsoft Teams is a digital workspace where teams can create, collaborate, and communicate authentically just like they would in the real world. Microsoft Teams is your hub for teamwork in Office 365. And whether you're working with millennials or Gen Xers, Figgy, then this is a great way to keep in touch with your team with so much to look after. Wouldn't it be great if there was just one place to look, not just look through everybody's bags like you would do, Figgy?
That would be nice.
Microsoft Teams brings everything all into one place. It's like one big bag that everything is in. Teams is that single workspace where you can work, share, and connect with people in your work life. Teams brings together your chats, meetings, files, and apps all in one place, so you don't have to go looking for all these different conversations that you're having. It's all there in Microsoft Teams. Take teamwork where you work with apps for mobile and for desktop. So whether you're sprinting towards a deadline or sharing your next big idea, Teams can help you and your team achieve even more. Microsoft Teams is available in Office 365. Visit office.com/teams to learn even more. Okay. Figgy, I want to get into some of these questions with you. So yeah. Let me ask you, Kelly Lynch wants to know, Figgy, why do you think so many people are crying this season? What is it about Ghost Island?
You know what? I cried on my season. I think a lot of people cry. I think it's
and
just
you
about
cried after your season.
Yeah, I cry all the time. I'm so emotional. I think that we have a lot of fans this season. I don't know how many recruits we have, but I think we do have a lot of really great fans on the show this season. And we're watching them, you know, really struggle in some moments. You know, they're being very vulnerable. They're opening up to one another about family and all these things. And I think this allows us to connect with these characters very well. I think maybe when you're a fan, it's like you're inside your television, as Adam said on our season. We were inside of our TVs. We're millennials, and it was a dream being on Survivor. And, you know, to think about a dream coming to an end, missing your family, knowing that you're so many miles away from home, it's very, very hard. So I think that, you know, we do have a super young cast too. I think that has a lot to do with it. If we had, you know, I mean, even older people do cry, you know, they miss their families too. But being so young and being away from home and challenging yourself and trying to prove to the people that you love that you can do this, to yourself that you can do it, it's hard. And especially, I think, the younger you are, the more emotional you are because you're so far away from home.
Okay, Shannon Gates writes, Jeff clearly loved the Millennials tribe, and since your season, the newbie casts have gotten younger and younger and even younger. Do you like seeing these majority Millennial casts, or would you prefer more variety? Some people have said this season is Millennials versus Millennials.
Yeah, it's a very, very young cast. I do like to see a variety personally. I do like seeing, you know, someone like Joe, what was his quote? He was like, getting it done at 71. I think that's what it was. Yes. And I love that because it just shows that anyone can really play the game and just chase after a dream. It doesn't matter how old you are. You can still do it and you can make it as far as Joe did. He placed fourth and he was evacuated because he got sick from overeating. And it's, you know, something as little as that, that kills a dream, but it doesn't matter how old you are. And I love watching people of all ages challenge themselves and getting it done no matter what age they are. So I will agree that this cast is super duper young. And Jeff did love my tribe because my tribe was the shit. Like my tribe, like we were just so explosive every challenge. Like, and that's one, another thing I love watching back is our reactions every time we won. That's when we really came together. Michaela would pick me up and hug me and it didn't matter in that moment because we came together and we win. And we would show what millennials were really made of in that moment. And, you know, we are one of the greatest tribes of all time, as Jacob would say. And I do like seeing variety a lot.
Yeah. Well, I really like your tribe in particular because I feel like that, you know, I'd say just about 10 out of 10 really big personalities and some really good casting across the board. And I do think there is something to younger people on the show in that they are less guarded and also more likely to make the big mistake as well, which I think is also very fun, where I think that the older players tend to be more conservative. And I think that in this era of Survivor, where Survivor likes to see people take really big swings, sure, in a perfect world, you have the person who comes into the show with all this life experience who's ready to come in and dominate. And, you know, even Dominic this season is a great example of that, somebody who's ready to take calculated risks and big swings. But I think for the most part, when you have old players that are, you know, older and have a family, I think they're looking for the safe bet. And I think that you have where young people come in and they're more likely to wear their heart on their sleeve and make a crazy move and be a, more like a Jacob Derwin who's going to come in and just, you know, play like he's shot out of a cannon.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking to someone who made a huge mistake on their season, right? And you know what? It's something that I look back on and I was just trying, my goal was to manipulate people and then I let my heart get in the way and be like, F, I really care about these people. And then I started to care about someone else on my tribe and it ended up, you know, it was just, after everything, it was just an awful situation.
Who was the other person that you cared about?
What do you mean? Like from my tribe other than Taylor?
Yes.
I mean, I started to, you know, you connect with people, but you don't want to overconnect because you want to be able to vote people out. And I started to, you know, I was caring about, Jay, he's like my bro out there. And Michelle was like my sister. I semi care for Michaela. Yeah. The Triforce, made up of four people. And, you know, it's hard to, you know, possibly think about down the road, like, would I have been able to vote out Michelle? Would I have been able to vote out this person? And, it's very difficult, but like you said, millennials and young people in general are more likely to make mistakes. And, you know, we learn from them. And I think that's a beautiful thing about my experience overall is that I've really learned a lot. Especially, you know, it's almost been 2 years since I played. And it's been a wild 2 years and I've grown so much as an individual. I've become so much stronger and it's just a very beautiful thing for me. And I couldn't be happier whether or not, you know, the whole thing happened on my season. It is what it is, but I got to learn. And I think a lot of other people got to learn from me as well.
Okay. Marcus O'Neill wants to know, from a game perspective, what advice would you give to future Survivor contestants about entering into a showmance? Is it always a bad idea? So here are Jenna and Sebastian, who are just setting sail off on a Survivor showmance potentially. So as somebody who's been through it, and I really think, Figgy, that after Rob and Amber, I'm starting to think that maybe Figtails might be the second most iconic Survivor showmance.
Oh, thanks.
On the show. On the yeah. show. I mean, yeah. that is there. I mean, is there a couple that I'm missing that ended up being more impactful in the show?
I don't think so. I mean, you had actual people like rolling around from, I mean, you had Amanda and Ozzy, but that wasn't as like hardcore.
Ozzy did propose to Amanda on the show, but they didn't, there wasn't really a lot of like, they were sort of like, they were like, sort of like sneaking off and Sarita's like, hey, what are they doing? And,
but it didn't really,
it wasn't really a big part of the story.
Yeah. Our story evolved into that mainly. And that sucked for me because I was okay with it, but at the same time, like, you know, whenever I got on my Swap Tribe, the first thing Taylor tried to do is hug me. And I immediately was like, shut it down. Don't touch me. Don't talk to me. Don't even look at me. Please go over there. They can't know. Because I knew that they couldn't know. That was an easy target for them to take us out. And he's like, seriously? And then Adam was like, you know, you're going to do what she says. He's like, yeah, but stupid. But again, that shows that he doesn't understand the game and wasn't really there. And I think that you just have to be careful with who you're aligning with. I don't think Showmance is, obviously, speaking from experience, I got taken out, you know, mainly because of that, but also because I was just more of a strategic player than Taylor. I was playing the game way more than Taylor. I was looking down the road. He was looking to go surf in the ocean the whole time and literally building surfboards out of bamboo. I mean, come on, we're not here for a vacation. We're playing Survivor. We're playing for $1 million. I don't have time for that. And it's all about being smart and who you're aligning with. I don't think that showmances are the best thing, having been there, done that.
Can it work?
It could work if you're super smooth. Like, I mean, if you're not being all over each other and you're just like keeping it kind of secretive. I mean, it's hard to keep anything secretive on the island. It could work, but speaking from experience, I can't be for them. I really can't. And now when everyone was like, I'm cringing at Figgy and Taylor, I get it, because I'm like, oh my God, just learn from me, please. Like, you saw what happened to me. Don't do it. But if you can be smooth like Parvati, that's okay. But now that we're getting all these super fans that know who Parvati is and what she's capable of and what she did, you don't want to be known as Parvati because you're going to go.
Mm-hmm. But we see in these bios, and they ask people about, okay, would you get into a relationship on there? They say, well, no, I have learned from the cautionary story of Fig Tales.
Yeah. And it makes me happy. But I mean, you got to, if you're flirting to stay in the game like Jenna, if she can just kind of keep her distance like that, I think that'll be okay. I think if it evolves into something more on the show, I mean, I think she's out of luck on that category. She just cannot let it exceed what it is right now. And it makes me happy to see that people are like, I've learned, I'm not going to go as far as them. But I guess we're going to have to wait to see if that is true. Because we go into the game thinking we're going to play one way, like I did, and we come out and we've played a completely different way. And that's just how Survivor works.
There's a question from Allie from NYC. Allie says, I was tipped off that Stephanie was going home this week when we saw Kellen tearing up at Tribal as Stephanie talked about being a mom. Didn't Brendan say in his exit interview that he knew it was him going home because Kellen got emotional when he was pleading his case? This could have been spin, but it's starting to look like a pattern, especially with Jeff specifically pointing out that after the immunity challenge that Kellen can't hide her emotions. I know she's your winner pick, Rob, but could this be Kellen's downfall? Figgy, Kellen talked about in the preseason that empathy was a superpower for her. She can really feel other people's emotions. But this is two boots in a row where when the person who is going home engages with her in conversation, she can't help but hide her emotion. Do you think that that could be a downfall for her in terms of having a poker face?
100%. She doesn't have a good poker face, I don't think. And at that point, I would almost start looking around. If I'm telling a sad story, I'm going to look at Kellen and see if she's crying to see what's going to happen. And if I have an idol, I might play it. But I think that's definitely a downfall. You have to be able to shut it down when people get emotional and when people just start opening up and trying to sway things, because it's a game for $1 million. And that's what's really difficult about the game, right? You know, I think Kellen, personally, like we've heard her story a little bit. She's been through a lot. She got married, quickly got a divorce, and she's still figuring out who she is. So I think she has a great social game where maybe she connects a lot with people. And maybe she did connect very well to Stephanie's own story. Maybe they did have a heart to heart at some point out there that we didn't see. But it's definitely not good when you're going to be crying in the middle of a tribal council, because if I'm your ally, I might kind of view you as weak and not the best ally, because you can't hide what's happening and what's going to happen. So I think that definitely is a downfall for Kellen.
Figgy, Emma wants to know, if you went to Ghost Island, would you play the game of chance?
100%. There's no doubt about that. I know Kellen made a smart decision. But at the same time, I think that everyone would be so confused. Kellen, as a human being, I don't think could hide from anyone. Listen, I went to Ghost Island. I didn't. I lost the game and I lost my vote. I feel like she would have to tell people that. And I think that would be the issue. With me, I would just be like, straight up, I didn't get to play a game, and not explain about the missing vote, because I would be able to hide that and be like, all right, I don't know what happened. And I would start pointing fingers at other people. Kellen is very emotional and has a really big heart. Not that I don't, but just in the game, we see that she is wearing her heart on her sleeve. I would 100% play the game, because Survivor is about taking risks. And if I'm just going to lose a vote and it's still 4-4, I'm okay with that.
Yeah. In going back to Kellen, in terms of her wearing her heart on her sleeve and then having, you know, these very emotional reactions to people, do you feel like that she's in danger of, if she does get far into this game and she does make a big move where she slits somebody's throat in the game, do you feel like that that person could have more animosity towards her, considering that she was so emotional the whole way through, like we've seen in the past where somebody like a Dawn makes it to the end? I'm not trying to compare where Dawn, you know, from all accounts, you know, required a lot of emotional support from the other players, but could they look at her and say, hey, you were so sensitive the whole way through, and then you did this to me? Would that feel like an even worse betrayal, as opposed to somebody who's like a game bot the whole way through, and then when they flip on you, it's like, ah, well, I kind of expected it?
I think that totally depends on the player. Like, if she did something to Chris, I think Chris would totally be someone who would be like, how could you do that to me? But I feel like we have a good amount of fans that would respect that she is in this weird part of her life, and being able to do something like that in the game of Survivor, I think that's huge for someone. And I think that's commendable. For me, I would commend it. I would be angry. I wouldn't hold her. Like, I wouldn't be like holding it against her if I was like giving her a jury speech. I think that's something commendable, and I'm hoping that that's something she might be able to do down the road, because I feel like we do have a lot of, like I said, a lot of players this season that are fans that understand and comprehend good gameplay, minus Chris Noble, who would be someone I think who would definitely take it to heart and take it all the way to the jury speech and being like, why'd you do this? I'm not voting for you. I could totally see him doing something like that. But for everyone else, I think everyone is respecting everyone's game.
Figgy, Marcus O'Neill wants to know, do you have any good pre-jury stories from Millennials versus Gen X?
Oh, man.
Let me take attendance on that group, because just to remind me. So you had the because it was more Gen Xers than Millennials, right?
Yeah, it was honestly, like, I love everybody from my season. But when I got voted out right out the gate and I hadn't bonded with anyone really that was voted out, I thought it was such a lame group of people, and I was just angry. I'm like, man, this is the worst. Like, I'm with the lamest people. But it was Rachel was the first out. Then you had Mari, who I got everyone as well as my alliance to vote her out. Then you had
she mad at you.
Paul. When I first got there, I couldn't sleep, and it felt so weird to sleep in a room by myself. But a couple of us fell asleep in a TV room, so I was okay. And I was going to bed bawling my eyes out silently. Mm-hmm. Woke up, went out to the hammock and started writing in my journal. And the first thing she did when she woke up was come out and talk to me and ask me why I voted her out. And it was just like, I understand, like, in my mind, I'm like, this is awkward. But at the same time, I'm like, I get it. She needs a little bit of closure. So I explained to her why. And then it's, you know, this, I wish I would have worked with you. You know, if you would have made it to the end, because you were such a great player, you probably would have won. And if you wouldn't have done this, like, I think things would have been different. Like, it's a bunch of, if this wouldn't have happened with everybody, right? Cece and I like wanted to work together, and like her and I would always eye at each other, you know, in between challenges. So like we wanted to work together if we would have made merge, and we didn't. Then I had Michaela, and I was just like, Lord, help me. And Paul was the only guy. And I just felt so bad for him because he was miserable. He didn't like, he's like, please, I don't want to go to Australia. I just want to go back to Florida. I won't tell anybody. And obviously they're not going to send him back, but he was miserable. He's funny when he's drunk. Mm-hmm. He's a character when he's drunk. He takes out that inner rocker that he is back home in Florida. He like is in a cover band, and he would just like start flipping his hair. He was trying to go see Iron Maiden in Australia, and they wouldn't let him because he was the only person who wanted to go see them. And it was
in the world.
Yeah, that too. But he's the only person on our jury that wanted to go see Iron Maiden, and we're like, bro, I'm sorry, we're not going. And we try to like, you know, have moments with them. But I'm trying to think, like Michaela and I would have moments where we would argue, and I had to walk away because I just didn't want to argue with her in public because people would just start staring and she would just be rude and I wouldn't be able to take it. So I just would march down like it was on a boat one day. And I just left the top floor of the boat, went downstairs, and I just sat with our zookeeper at the time. And I was just like, I'm just going to sit here because I can't deal with that. So, I mean, I partied one time. I only got drunk a couple times. Because mm-hmm. Like I said, it was kind of a weird group of people to really party with.
Yeah.
And Lucy became one of my best friends out there. I love Lucy, surprisingly. We really bonded. And what's really sad is to think about if David wouldn't have played his idol for Jessica. Jessica would have went home. I possibly would have got Lucy on my swap tribe. Lucy hated Ken. Lucy and I got along on the pre-jury trip. What would have happened? Like, wow. And it, like I said, you know, it's all these things. I think about that. And it's just, it's so crazy to think about things like that.
So
and
who
having
would have been hosting a podcast with David Bloomberg, Lucy.
No, probably still would have been Jessica.
Okay.
Jessica's a huge fan. In comparison to Lucy. Lucy has five kids or four kids, and she's busy. She's busy being tiger mom, so she wouldn't have time for that. But just to think about, you know, what could have happened and becoming friends with her. Yeah. And oh, I guess everyone thought Paul was some famous guy, and he was just playing it up. Mm-hmm. Whenever we went out to dinner, Paul would act like he was paying. And Paul would be like, get whatever you want, Get whatever you want. Yeah. Oh, you want another drink? Maggie, get another drink. I'm like, will you please stop? Because you're not buying the tab. And this is just weird. Like, he was just acting like a big baller. And it was
why?
Kind
so
of
the people in the restaurant would treat him differently. Or was the handler like, oh, Paul.
No, the handlers were just letting Paul do his thing. And that was a little weird that when Paul was like, oh, yeah, let's get 10 appetizers. I'm like, you know what, Paul? Like, I think we just need a couple. I don't think we need 10. He was drinking all the beers. And once he gets drunk, it's mm-hmm. just game. It's game over. Paul just, he's a hoot. Oh my goodness. Love him, but he's crazy.
All right. Dominic Malpietti wants to know, would you card Michael if he came into a bar you were tending?
It is the state law in Tennessee to card every single human being, and I would definitely card him.
Yes. Would you be able to tell that he was 18?
No.
No.
No, I think he looks like a 22, 23-year-old. So mm-hmm. I think anybody wouldn't card him, honestly. Some people don't card here, but when it comes to work, I would totally go by the rules. I'm not one of those people, unless they're like an 80-year-old person who left their wallet in their car. I'm like, it's okay. I don't want you to go grab your cane and walk all the way out there for it. It's fine. I get it. You got gray hair. It's cool. But for Michael, I think if he were to go anywhere, I think that he could totally get away with not getting carded and drink whatever he wanted.
Okay. Dino wants to know, hey Figs, do you think that Jenna and Sebastian will have the love goggles in the game?
Love goggles.
Oh, he just had to play that disgusting, the disgusting, oh, he who must not be named.
Love goggles.
God, ew. I can't believe he just played that. I don't think he's going to get love goggles. I don't. I think Sebastian is very bro-y. He's very similar to he who must not be named. But I just think that Sebastian is more of a fan than he was. So I think that he'll be able to play the game a little bit more and maybe add some strategy that he, who must not be named, did not do on my season. I think that they'll be able to keep down the Love Goggles, and I hope I'm right, because if they can, then they'll make it a little bit further.
Okay. A couple of people wrote in with questions about the whether or not you are going to be somebody who does an MTV reality show. Clayton says, can Figgy talk about rumors she was contacted for an MTV reality show? Does she have hopes or desires to be on TV again? And Edma wanted to know, MTV's doing a lot of digging into the CBS reality pool. Would you ever be interested in going on The Challenge? Is that something that would be enticing to you?
I think any competition show is enticing to me. I'm just super competitive. I would much prefer to go back on Survivor at least one more time before that were to happen. If Jeff was like, you have to pick right now, you could go do this or you can be on Survivor, I would pick to go back on Survivor in a heartbeat. But it's not something I would be opposed to doing at all. I'm just super competitive, and a lot of it has to do with me being like, I grew up playing four sports. I played volleyball, basketball, softball, and tennis. And, you know, after the referees would blow the whistle in basketball for a tie-up, I would still be wrestling the girl for the ball because I just had a habit when I was done for some reason. Like, I was just super scrappy. And, you know, that's why I lived for the scrappy challenges in Survivor when we had to do the water challenge on my season. I freaking loved it. I got to kick people and try to, like, choke them out. Like, I love competitions. So competition shows, I'm about, if I was given the opportunity and I had the okay, and Jeff's approval to do it, and I wouldn't get like not cast on Survivor again, I would totally do it.
Now, going back on the show, I know how bad you want to go back. Do you feel like that you think that if you had that opportunity a second time, do you feel like that you would play more conservative in that, yeah, I've wanted this opportunity so badly to come back that I don't want to make a mistake and potentially go out early? Or do you think that you would be maybe even more aggressive in a second time out?
I think aggressive people who are too aggressive get the boot very early. So I think it's important for any player to be very observant to other people before they open their mouths. And when I came into the game, I was super aggressive, not even just with the showman situation, but if you talk to anybody from my original tribe, they'll tell you, like, you know, Mari would be walking in the bushes with Michaela saying, Figgy's running the show. And it was just because I was very vocal. Maybe, you know, in real life, I try to work on that as a person. I talk a lot. So I, you know, I would reverse a lot of my own curses going back a second time. And definitely not doing a showman. Thank the Lord, I have a great boyfriend.
Okay. I was going to say, what if you got out there and you found the man of your dreams?
No. I think I have the man of my dreams right now. He's pretty awesome. And I don't think I do know. I have the man of my dreams. He's great. And I'm very thankful for him because I actually started dating him when my season had just aired. We had just met, and he had to watch my whole story unfold on television. He came to the reunion show. I know, poor Austin. He came to the reunion show. At first I didn't know if I should invite him, but I was like, you know what? Like, you're a part of my life and you've been supportive through all of this, so I would love for you to come. And he flew out because that was the week of my birthday. And like, he's a great dude. So no showmances would ever happen ever in my life.
What about blood versus water season? Now you'd be coming in with a showmance.
Oh, I would love that. Austin would be so great. Like, he does run a medical software company, so it is pretty hard for him to get time off and for us to even vacation sometimes. But I think if he was at a good point in his life, he would totally go on, and I think he would kill it. He's such a likable person. Anytime I put him on my Instagram or on my Twitter photos, like, the fans love him. They eat it up. Austin is just a very, very personable human being, and he would be great on that.
Okay. Can I give you some coaching for when you play again, Figgy?
Sure, yes. I will take anything in because I want to play again, and I will take all the advice.
Here's what we're going to do, okay? You get there day one. You tell people, oh, please, I prefer Jessica, not Figgy. You're a different person now.
Okay.
You're Jessica.
Okay.
Look at that.
I actually kind of like that. That's kind of...
Figgy, that was the old me. That was the
Figgy's
old me.
The old me.
I was so young.
But you know what? The problem is everyone calls me Figgy. Like, everyone since I've been little has called me Figgy. And even my mom, like my mom is Mama Fig. And like Mama Fig. Everyone calls my mom. They're like, oh, how's Mama Fig? Like Mama Fig is my mom and I'm Figgy. My sister was always a Figgy growing up until she got married and now she's a Till. But I mean, Figgy has been my name since I played sports when I was little. So it's very hard for me. And even walking in Nashville, if I run into people, they're like Figgy. And it's just, it's hard to escape that because that's just something I've grown up with. But I do like the idea.
That was the old me.
Yeah, but there just can't be another Jessica on my season because then I would be annoyed. Because
I forgot I wanted to talk to you about this. Going back to another Jessica from last season, Jessica Johnston. Mm-hmm. And of course, we had another showmance last season. And with all due respect to Cole and Jessica, I think that maybe not quite as iconic as Figtails, but that we saw, much like yourself, we saw the woman in the relationship get targeted first. And do you think, is this a cautionary tale for Jenna? Do you think that Jenna will go out before Sebastian does?
It's very likely because Jenna says that she has RBF, right? She has resting bitch face. And if she can't clean that up.
Think
and
that about her. Did you pick that up?
You know what? I do see sometimes where she does have this really just stern look and it's just her, like me. I don't know if she's a little nervous and she's scared that she's going to get voted out, but I can sense when she has kind of a stale look on her face. And she said it before on the show. She's like, even in an interview, she said like, you know, I have a stale face. And, I think if she can work on that, that might not be the case because Sebastian is, no offense to Jenna, he's stronger. He's stronger than me. He's stronger than a lot of women on that season. He's a man. Let's hope so. Mm-hmm. But he's stronger. So if she can maybe work in with his alliance and be like, hey, he's stronger than me. I'm not going to beat you in these challenges. Then maybe her life can be saved down the road if she does make the merge to even say that. But for Jessica, she was playing the game a little bit more. I mean, Cole brought very similar characteristics that I once saw in a person on my season. And, you know, he even had a big mouth and was telling everyone everything. And Jessica was a stronger player. Food. Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, did they clone them? I'm so confused. They literally were the same person. Really? And they.
Yeah. I don't think so.
I'm going to come through the speakers and I'm going to choke you is what I'm going to do. Rob, if you play one more voice clip. Right,
I apologize.
I don't care. It's fine. It's funny. It's funny. But no, it does seem like they found someone that was super just like Taylor, and Jessica fell into the same thing I was. And, you know, I mean, she started talking about her being a virgin and stuff. And that was last season. That was, I was TMI. Don't need to know that. It's okay. Like we all have our own things, girl, but she did get wrapped up in that. And, you know, she was too close to him, but it almost seemed like maybe it was a little reverse because it made it seem like she was always around him.
Mm-hmm.
Taylor was always around me, and Cole was, you know, at the same time as those two were a little showmans, he was still going up to other people working on his own game. Taylor never did that. Taylor was a puppy that was right by my side, would sit, would stay, would eat, would flip, would do whatever I said. And Cole was not like that. So, for Jessica, it was just, she fell for the looks and didn't get a full version of the brain before going into that, kind of like me, except someone lied about a situation. But yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. I think I follow who the someone who was lying about a situation is.
Taylor.
I'm following Taylor. The blind item. Yeah.
Yeah. Taylor. I was talking about Taylor on that one. But yeah, Jessica didn't have a huge lie like that, but Jessica didn't realize that.
Yeah,
exactly. But we just didn't know that Cole was loose lips like that because Taylor wasn't with me. Mm. And Cole was completely just like messing up her game. And I'm sorry, but like as soon as he did that, cut him off. Like she just wouldn't like give up on him at that point. I'm just like, girl, no, he already was telling everyone about the idol. Like, what are you doing?
Okay. This is a question from T. Wynn who wants to know, what did your hair smell like out on the island? Dead weasel or almost good, still good?
Almost still good. No, it definitely smelled like dirt. I don't even think I ever really smelled my hair. It was dread.
Sand.
It was dreading. And I could totally, like I said that in Twitter, I could totally relate to Sebastian saying, hey, if she's going to braid my hair and flirt with me, I'm going to keep her. Because not a single person on my season, even in the pre-jury, knew how to braid hair. And I had these dreams about going on Survivor and getting the braids and putting the buff on as my shirt and like living out my dream, winning $1 million. Like, and I didn't have my hair braided once, and it was dreading. I lost a lot of hair, 2 handfuls of hair. Mm-hmm. And if you can keep, the upkeeping of hair is real. Like, that is such a struggle. If you have long hair, my hair goes down to my ass. So that was losing 2 handfuls of hair. It's really hard. So I understand where he's coming from with the hair braiding situation. It just smelled like dirt though.
Okay. Will from America wants to know, what was the deal with the podcast Figgy did with Troyzan? So now talk to us about how this came together, that you have a YouTube channel and you make you have an amazing camera. It's a very, very impressive camera. And
thanks.
You make videos with Troyzan sometimes. How did this come to be?
Honestly, it was just with whoever was there. I mean, I've interviewed Bob Crowley, mm-hmm. from Gabon. So it's whoever I can be around.
Did you play in his Survivor game that he has up in Maine?
I haven't done that, no, but okay. I've been invited, and I was thinking about doing that this year, actually, but I believe I'm away for a wedding when that's happening. So it kind of was conflicting on my schedule. Otherwise I would have. But yeah, I want to at some point. I think that'd be fun. I hear good things about that. But, back to Troyzan, how that happened was, I forget how, you know, we all kind of meet through social media and we were messaging each other, and I grew up watching Troyzan and I loved watching him, on Game Changers. And then I loved all of the Game Changers, to be honest. So I was really excited to meet all of them. And I bonded so well with all of them, because I would have on my season, like, my millennial tribe was awesome, but I would have much rather been with the Gen Xers. They were just kind of more my mind back home, how that would have been fitting. It would have been fitting for me not to be in a showman's, obviously. Mm-hmm. And you know, I get along well with older people. My boyfriend is 32, and that's not even old, obviously, but like, I'm 25, I'll be 26 this year. I hang out with mainly 30-year-olds. So that's why Gen Xers are more my style. But anyways, with Troyzan, I met him, and, we just became friends, and I became friends with all these people. And, the first time we did one, I think he was in town for, he's a photographer. So he was in town doing something. And anytime.
Click,
click, click.
Nice.
Yeah.
Nice. So anytime, anyone's in town, I always want them to reach out to me, because I always want to meet up with them. Go grab
lunch. In the Survivor Facebook group, you post, hey, I'm going to be in this city this day.
Yeah,
do any survivors want to hang out?
Yeah, I always want to meet everyone, because being a fan growing up, like, I still haven't met Rupert yet. So hopefully one day in Indiana, I'll get to meet him. But there's so many people I want to meet and just connect with.
We actually have a treat for you. We have on the line to join us, Rupert Boneham. Are you there?
Figgy.
Oh, my God.
Such a pleasure. I'm such a big fan of yours.
That's not funny.
I was in a showmance with Laura.
Oh my gosh. I remember those sloppy kisses he gave her. Oh man.
They were the best. I wore the love goggles.
Anyway, thank you, Rupert. That was great. That's actually a really good impression.
I try.
That's really good.
I try. So yeah. So, all right. So you met up with Troyzan and you guys hit it off. And
yeah, well, yeah.
Really click, 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 click. And then you guys did the YouTube videos.
Yeah, well, I love talking Survivor, and he's a huge fan. So whenever he was in Nashville, I was like, well, do you mind if I make a video of us like talking about Survivor and just like goofing off? And he's like, yeah, it's totally fine. And then we did another one. I forget when. It might have been for Heroes, Healers, and Hustlers. I kind of have a bad memory. But yeah, anyone who ever wants to make videos, I just think it's so fun. And it's a great way for me to, you know, reach out with fans and talk to them and answer any questions they might have. I love talking about Survivor. You know, when I was at work today, I ran into Survivor fans, and that was really cool. And we talked for like 20, 30 minutes about it. And I could talk about Survivor all day long. So any chance I get that I can talk with other players about things, like I said, you know, people write inappropriate stuff all the time online. And someone was like, are you and Troyzan hooking up? I'm like, why would you even ask that? Like, that's no offense to Troyzan. Like,
it wasn't Troyzan that wrote that, right?
No, let's hope not. But you know, like, why don't you ask the same about Rob, guys? Like, it's just weird that people,
me?
I mean, no, Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's just trolls. So, I love interviewing anyone I can. And that's how that kind of came up. Just blossoming friendships and just the love of, Survivor and going through the same things together. And, you know, like we both played with Michaela, we both played with Zeke, like just that, you know, that familiarity was kind of cool.
I want to ask you about something that I had seen you post. That do you have difficulty sleeping because of Survivor?
I sometimes do, to be honest. I actually lately, my boyfriend, sometimes he's told me like, hey, play like the sound of rain when you go to sleep, because I always have to have some type of noise, but I actually do not sleep with pillows. I have not slept with a pillow in a very like, I mean, when I got voted out, I couldn't sleep with it, and I haven't slept with one like firmly, like underneath me comfortably. And since the 2 years that I've played, I have never used
that. You went on Survivor, and then there were no pillows on Survivor. And you, was it sort of like, I realized that I don't need support for my head anymore because I didn't have it on Survivor? Or is there some sort of like connection between Survivor?
I feel like it could be some sort of connection with Survivor. I don't choose that. I think that having not slept with one for 18 days, and I'd say, no, it's like, oh, that's not a really long time, Biggie. But at the same time, it really is. And I feel like my neck was just like, F you pillow, like get out of here. And now like, I feel really good without one. Like I used to always have neck cramps, and now I really don't. And I'm not recommending people do that. Like I have a Tempur-Pedic bed somewhat or memory foam. So my head kind of sinks in, but not really, cause it's not super heavy. But I mean, I don't have any issues. I just lay flat on my side like that with a pillow, and it works.
So is it something from Survivor, or you just are cured from the need to have a pillow?
No, I mean, Survivor totally created that. It was never a thing. I totally would sleep with so many pillows before. And now, ever since I played, I haven't slept with one since. So I blame the Survivor gods, Jeff Probst, and all the production people for me not sleeping with pillows anymore.
Okay, but it seems like it's a good thing. That's one less thing you have to worry about.
Exactly, except my boyfriend sleeps with pillows. So one time when we had a sleepover, he was like, he couldn't sleep because I didn't have any pillows. So I had, I have to have pillows because he can't sleep or come to my house if I don't. So now I have pillows that I don't use.
Okay. Let me see what else I have for you. Somebody wrote in, Felipe Shimon, one of our listeners wrote in about how magical was this moment between you and the one and only Billy Garcia. And it's a picture of that, that you and Billy Garcia are like reenacting Lady and the Tramp with a chicken wing.
Chicken wing, chicken tender.
Can you explain this story? How did this happen?
So I was actually so excited to meet Billy Garcia, and people would say I'm crazy for that. But I was so excited to meet him at the charity event we were at in Cincinnati, Ohio. Mm-hmm. And when I found out he was there, I was like, oh my gosh, like we both found love, and like we bonded over that. And it was just so hilarious. And then I was like, can we please, like he was like in love with me, not like, oh my God, thank you. Oh, but like, we like just like bonded so well. And maybe maybe I did become his Candace. I don't know. But I was like, you know what? Can we take a picture? I have to post something online of us meeting and just like the ridiculousness of our love stories. And he was like, yeah, let's do it. And I was like, what about this chicken tender? Like, I'm not going to kiss you, but like, let's put this chicken tender between us. Like, I have that photo. I have one with me like all over him like that. Like, Billy's such a nice guy. He's a great guy. And I had to have that photo. And I remember tweeting that because it was, we found love in a hopeless place is what I tweeted. And that was the best tweet of my life. I was fantastic. Okay.
Well, Figgy, thank you so much for coming on and talking through all of this with me. It was a lot of fun to catch up with you. We need a hashtag Figgy, and I'm not talking about your Twitter name or your Instagram name. So what should the hashtag for this podcast be?
You're putting me on the spot. I don't know. I know. What would be a showman's name? Getting Figgy with it.
How about Ghost Smoothly?
I like that.
Okay. It's not great. It's not great, Figgy. It's okay.
It's okay. It is okay. I'm over here like writing things down. I'm like, I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
I'm trying to like combine our names. I'm trying to think of what we've talked about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's fine though. That works.
Okay.
I can't think of anything.
All right. Well, Figgy, if people want to follow you on social media, I see that you're tweeting about the show constantly. You're tweeting out polls to people of what do you think is going to happen next. You're very interactive on Twitter.
Yeah, I like to have fun with everyone. And they can follow me at hashtag Figgy, everything spelled out. And that's also the same for my Instagram. So Twitter and Instagram are the same handles at hashtag Figgy. And I love to be super fan interactive. I try to answer any questions they might have. So just hit me up, follow me, and let's stay connected.
Yes, that you tweeted out to your Twitter following last night. Who do you want to see go home between the three? 65% of the hashtag Figgy followers said Jenna.
Yeah.
They don't like this new showmance.
I think they don't like the new showmance, but I also don't know if,
making the figtail videos on Instagram. They don't want to be another showmance.
No, they don't. We've already talked about Michael and Stephanie just have way more character development. And Jenna is just kind of, she followed Stephanie a little bit. She was more like a sidekick. She was Robin. Stephanie was Batman. And we're seeing kind of, her life is in Sebastian's hands. So she's just kind of, I wouldn't call her a goat right now, but she's just following. She definitely is following. If we don't see gameplay from her soon, she's going to get labeled as a goat.
Okay. All right, Figgy. And then what's next for you? Tell me about this. You had just signed a new modeling contract. Is that correct?
Yeah, I did. I signed with Wilhelmina in New York. I was a boxing instructor for right after Survivor. I wanted to get really back into fitness because I lost the weight. And then once you get voted out, you gain it all back because you're starving and you think you're going to look all nice and come home and have all these, the 12 pack abs and come home and I haven't lost any weight. I've only gained. And I'm like, all right, I need to get this together real quick because I got a reunion show in a couple months. So after that, I really just got involved in fitness and started getting addicted to working out. And once you start, you can't stop. And that's what everyone always asks me. How do you start working out? Well, you got to start in order to keep on going. So I got involved in becoming a boxing instructor and just falling in love with fitness in general. And I got reached out to by Wilhelmina, and they're a really big agency in New York and international in general. And I'm in their sports and fitness division. So I just did a campaign with Adidas. And, I'm excited for what's to come, hopefully. And I got great agents. So if I get more bookings, I do, but it's just a patient process, just like the Survivor process. So, I live my days, waiting for the next, booking. And in the meantime, though, I do like going and speaking at schools and trying to inspire people, and help people also chase their dreams, just like I did.
Okay. Well, Figgy, all the best to you. And, thank you so much for coming on with us, and, I greatly appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, take care, Figgy. Bye.
All right, bye.
All right, everybody, there you have it. Jessica, don't call me Figgy anymore, Figueroa, for when she plays a second time on Survivor. So lots of fun to catch up with Figgy. But we have no time to stop down because I've got my next podcast coming up here in just a couple of hours when Corinne Kaplan is going to be here in the studio talking with myself and the first lady of podcasting, Nicole Cesternino, on a special bonus edition of Rob Has a Podcast. We're going to record that here on Thursday night, and then we'll drop that probably sometime Friday night for you guys to listen to in the podcast feed. Make sure you subscribe. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes. And of course, my conversation with Brett LaBelle on the feedback show coming up as well this weekend. So make sure to get your feedback questions in. robhasawebsite.com/voicemail or 323-282-RHAP. And of course, look, we got a podcast coming up, a little taste of the podcasting with the first lady of podcasting, Nicole Cesternino. You can hear Nicole every single week on the Patreon 5 for 5, where we take all of your questions every week in the Patreon podcast feed. For more information on that, go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Looking forward to hearing what you have to say about this episode on social media and anything else you want to say to me. Always happy to get your tweets, except when they're really mean and offensive. I don't appreciate that. But other than that, feel free to reach out at Rob Cesternino. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.